Welcome to Movie Banter. See, we never plan this out. And now you've got it in stereo. So, you lucky people.
That's quite weird.
Come with us.
I am Paul Carenza.
I don't know what my name is.
I know, I thought I'd throw
I'm Paul Carenza, and so is my wife.
I'm Paul Carenza.
I'm also Paul Carenza. One of us is John Sands, and the other one is Jennifer Masters.
Jennifer Spartacus.
We're in a slightly odd mood. I think we're high on lunch.
I think high on life.
Well,
yeah.
Episode 60, baby!
60.
We're as old in weeks as Jenny is in years.
Wow.
It's amazing.
If
looks could kill, I'd be in small pieces right now.
60 episodes ago.
Well, that's true.
If we were a woman, then we'd get a free bus pass now.
Fair enough.
And if weeks were years.
Right.
Yes. So if a lot of things were different, then we could retire happily. But we can't. Weeks aren't years, and we aren't women, apart from Jen. So therefore,
well,
we will.
She says so,
and that's borderline.
Oh. So, I was going to say, oh, that was kind.
Seen her today, listeners.
We are sadly not women, or weeks. So in that, which case, we will not retire. We will continue. We will strive on and banter about movies.
Yeah.
Yes. Except, of course, it's not even weeks, years, because now we're every 2 weeks. We're actually kind of.
I was going to say that, but I didn't want to be seen to be pedantic.
80 weeks old now, or something. Yeah, I have no qualms about. Pedantic.
Can't
it's
do the math.
That's what I do. Maths.
There you go.
Sorry, for any American or overseas listeners, we say maths in the UK.
And you're wrong.
Yeah. I once got into a fierce email debate with someone like this. I had an entry on my site related to talking about maths. And this guy said, what's maths? You're just making up words. I said, no, we just call it maths. And he refused to believe it.
Yes.
Don't know why I bothered.
Well, you can count more than one mathematic. Ooh, fighting talk.
Anyway,
welcome to the episode. Whatever country you're from, greetings. And we have
greeting.
Yeah. If you're American. does that even make sense? I don't know.
No,
this week we should also, we've got lots to cram in this week, so we can't even afford this preamble, to be honest.
Starting with the strawberry flan that Paul and Jen are eating at the
moment. There's a big flan.
They're cramming in
a big cake.
Now.
So whenever I go quiet, I'm probably eating a flan. That's generally true in life.
Well, true.
And film-wise, we'll be bantering about The Lovely Bones.
Yes. And
A Single Man. A Leap Year.
Mm-hmm.
The Crazies. And another film, Micmacs. That's right, the French film.
Paddywhack.
Micmacs. Micmac, Paddywhack. There you go. Donne un français man, un bone. And we've got News Desk and your emails and tweets in the room of history. Desert Island Flicks will be doing Le Grand... Film de France, best French film, indeed.
Yeah.
So we'll do that. A bit of high class.
Oh yes,
couture.
I think that's a lot.
Yeah. So thanks
for coming. We'll see you next week. Yeah. Oh no, sorry, that's not quite.
Now because we only do it fortnightly, and this is going to be over an hour. So if over an hour is too long for your podcast listening attention span, just listen to half and come back to it in a week.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Spread it out a bit. So let's do a film. The first film I'm going to talk about. It's not. The Amazing Kirk. It's not.
No, stop.
It's not the brilliant Uhuru. It's not even the fantastic Mr. Spock. It's The Lovely Bones. Hey, are you with me?
If only we had a cricket chirping noise.
Is this thing on?
At this point.
1, 2, testing.
You wouldn't have thought you'd get tumbleweeds rolling past in Surrey, but suddenly we're surrounded by them.
Oh. It's a Star Trek reference.
You're on your own.
Lovely
with that one. It's barely a Star Trek reference.
It was.
It's.
Oh, I was tempting it to be. Anyway, doesn't matter. The film itself is not a Star Trek. This is the. It's Peter Jackson's latest. Now I was going to say epic because he makes epic films and he's clearly made this quite epic. Adapted from the book by Alice Sebold, and you probably know the rough idea of it. It's girl dies and then is. Looking back from the afterlife, the in between. They call it. Nothing to do with the in betweeners.
No, that's
the Channel 4 rather puerile sketch sitcom, but in a good way. There's nothing to do with that. So but this is his adaptation. Now you've read the book, haven't you, Jim?
I have. I've read it a few years ago and lent it and recommended it to other people because it's a very good. It's a very good story.
Mm.
Quite a sensitive story in places.
Yeah, it sold very, very well.
Mm.
And so I was looking forward to seeing the film for that very reason, to save me reading the book.
Well, I am too. Yeah. I haven't seen the film yet.
Well, I will give nothing away, because I can give lots away, because you've read it.
I've read it, that's fine.
And I generally read up obsessively on film, so I know roughly.
And given that,
I don't know exactly how it ends, but I can kind of guess.
Well, given that, as most people, everyone's, it's very clear in the trailer, that this girl dies, and that very early on, so then the film is about how it progresses from there. So in fact, there's not much to give away. All I will say, though, is a bit of a letdown. Slight shame.
See, that's what I've heard. Before it came out, everyone's saying, oh, Peter Jackson, his latest big thing, it's going to be great. And it actually was released, and most people seem to have just gone, no.
Yeah, exactly. It's. I think the main problem is that Peter Jackson himself said in an interview I heard last week that people say never work with children and animals, and he would add heaven to that because it's very difficult to portray heaven or the in-between, whatever you want to call it, on film. And I think that's the problem. And that's why I think I can. I haven't read the book, but I can see why. And you liked the book, didn't you?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, I could see why. It's a good book. But as a film...
Is any one person's...
The trouble is, you can't really... In a book, you can read it, you can imagine your own in-between.
So in the book, does the author describe heaven?
It's about this girl's stuck in this sort of limbo state where it's in her own private, personal, tailored to her heaven, in a way. And seeing the trailer for this, it all looks a little CGI-y.
Well, it does. It feels a bit like... the other versions of heaven I'm relating it to are... What Dreams May Come, Robin Williams' film, or Wet Dreams May Come, the porn version. There was a film called that released. Yeah, I'm afraid so. Didn't think it sold that well because What Dreams May Come didn't sell well either. But it actually reminded me of, without giving too much away of this other film, I've seen near the end of the film Knowing.
Oh, really?
If you recall when that sort of gets a bit otherworldly.
Yes.
And just that sort of, you know, this view of the very CGI, like you say, and just a tree in a field on a hill in a mountain overlooking a sea and a nook and a
oversaturated colours.
Yeah, just a little bit like, oh, this is the idea of heaven is countryside on a hill. And clearly Peter Jackson, he's a big fan of New Zealand, and he's gone back to the locations for Lord of the Rings and thought, yes, that's our heaven.
But heaven is full of orcs, apparently.
Well, clearly, yes, it's not quite not Battle of Minas Tirith or anything. But it's, I think that's the problem with it, really. And there's lots of that. There's lots of very overindulgent moments of this afterlife, afterworld thing of ships in bottles crashing on beaches, and then when the girl's happy, she's lolloping through fields with hand in hand with another girl, and then changing into 70s outfits. It's all filmed in the 70s. It's all set in the 70s, and so all these sort of, you know, just kind of. He needs an editor. He didn't need all that, rather.
Yeah,
he's got five minutes at a time of just her going off on these wild escapades. Surreal, it's wonderful, and it's clearly trying to be Terry Gilliam and Tim Burton,
well,
but it's not.
Well, I was going to say, it sounds a bit like Parnassus.
Well, exactly, yeah. And if you could do that,
I'd
great,
imagine that in the context of the Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, that makes sense. And you go into these fantasy worlds, but it's kind of connected to the story because they're working through and trying to find stuff. But if she's just wandering around the CGI landscape. It just sounds like it distracts a bit from what's meant to be going on.
I mean, the point in this book is that it's her, the girl in her 14-year-old's imagination, creating this wonder. And I think there's a lovely bit when they talk about, she talks about the smell of orange blossom, and because that's the way that her ideal place smells like. But I can't imagine that.
You can't really get that across in the film. That's the problem. And it's, you know, I don't blame you. You know, well done for trying, but it's very difficult to get that across. So I think they've just bitten off more they can chew, in a way, really.
Or maybe just got the wrong person.
Or maybe. There was actually a different director attached originally who then dropped out. So
Who was that?
I can't remember her name. She did the film Ratcatcher, an English director. I can't remember who. But anyway, that didn't happen, so Peter Jackson took it over.
But what about the real life stuff?
The real life stuff, yeah. Well, so, you know, it is about this, the family that is left behind, of course. And it's Rachel Weisz and Marky Mark.
And is Mark Wahlberg his usual searing self, roaring off
like
the screen
him.
In a
Actually,
burst
I quite,
of personality
I saw him in an interview. I saw him in an interview once on, I think it was David Letterman.
I just don't like him.
He was quite nice in interview. I quite liked him as a person. He's quite a family man,
actually,
guy.
I've seen him on Top Gear once.
Yeah, he's quite droll and quite funny. But on film, he just picks some stinkers. He's just not good.
I am being overly harsh there. Because weirdly, the film I liked him most in is the remake of The Italian Job. Which I still really quite like. Because the character is relatively lively and slightly more sort of leader and getting behind people. A lot of the time, he just seems to be a bit monosyllabic and a bit dull.
Yeah, he
and
seems
that
to
may
be,
just be the characters. Rather
remakes
and
adaptation seem to be what he just does. He's just your go-to guy for that, really. The only problem was, halfway through the film, I thought, he reminds me of something. And I thought, because the film's set in, I think, 73, 74, and he's got this sort of very sort of 70s look to him.
Floppy hair.
And the floppy hair thing. And I thought, Boogie Nights. And I kept like that after that. I did a slight snicker to myself.
Is it like Dirk Diggler has settled
down? Well, exactly.
Down,
I was just thinking, oh, well, you know, you've lost your daughter, but at least you've got a big penis. So, which is wrong. I know that's very wrong. You know.
Well, it's not that wrong to think in a cinema about a fictional story. If ever you happen to be at a funeral of someone.
Well, I would never.
But how's your penis? Have you at least got.
Well, but the trouble is, if your mind wanders that much in the film, they're doing something wrong.
Yes. Yeah, if your mind turns to Mark Wahlberg's penis during a. Then frankly,
I know.
Yeah, the director is not holding your attention.
Wasn't quite engaging with the piece, no. And
with the what?
Excuse me. dear.
My mum might listen to this.
Oh no, not
I'm sure she would have turned off after the first penis.
What was. Did I say penis? Penis?
I'm not surprised they said penis, I mean penis. Anyway, carry on.
Oh no.
Sorry, we're in that sort of mood.
Oh, it's a serious film.
Oh, but it's the problem with a serious. Any film dealing with serious subject matter that can't quite get a handle on it.
Exactly.
Then it loses you, and then it's easy to descend into class and talk about
penises. Okay, so there's Marky Mark. You've got Rachel Weisz, who was the first person attached to the film. Originally, it was going to be her and Hugh Jackman. From Marky Mark's huge thing to Hugh Jackman. But bizarrely, what really struck me is what it reminded me of throughout this film, when you've got this tree on the field and the tree turns into fairy dust and it drops berries and then they become ships and they sail all this sort of nonsensey heavenly stuff. Really reminded me of The Fountain, what I think was an awful
which
film.
Which I really still want to watch. I'll like it more than
it's in
you
the
do.
TV listings this week, and it's five stars out of five.
When's it
film
on?
Film 4. It's on, I said, later in the week. I don't know what day.
Have a look.
It's, and I would rate it less than one star out of five. It was nonsense, as far as I was concerned. And that was Rachel Weisz and Hugh Jackman as well. So if they had both been in this, that would have been a bit weird.
Yeah.
And like a sequel to it that I've been lulled into seeing without it saying The Fountain 2 on the poster. And I would have been very annoyed. So anyway, that's Rachel Weisz. She's okay in it. The lead, of course, is this girl called Cesare Roman, I think I believe her name. She was the girl in Atonement.
Okay.
So the one that wasn't Keira Knightley. And she's very good. She's very good in it. She's a very good actress. She's been in lots of new things lately, and she's been award tipped for it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And interesting enough, she's Irish and has yet to play her actual accent. Only ever done different accents. So there you are.
Irish can get away with the
They can do that. They can do that very well. Mm-hmm. And then Stanley Tucci is in it as well, who's very good.
Who is Oscar nominated?
He is an Oscar nominated, and he is very good as the. A neighbour, let's just say that much. But also, oddly,
From the trailer, it's implied.
Quite clear. He's a bit of a bad
guy. I'm sure you won't give anything away, but I kind of, because in the trailer it's strongly implied he's got something to do with it all, I'd kind of like it if it turns out he had nothing to do with anything, but I'll have to see the film to actually find out.
And Susan Sarandon completes the cast as the grandmother of the murdered girl. But she is, and it's worth mentioning that, because she is, it just seems wrong. She's this sort of, and she comes and looks after the family for a little bit. And it just, for a start, it's odd because the mother storms out, Rachel Weisz goes away, and you've got mother-in-law, because it's her mum, is Susan Sarandon. So she stays, as does Marky Mark. And for a little while, I don't remember that there's a sitcom on a couple of years ago called After You've Gone, which I had a slight hand in writing some of, which is, the setup was Nicholas Lyndhurst, Rodney from 24s and Horses, lives with his mother-in-law looking after the kids. And for a couple of scenes, it was like that.
Right.
And which, again, a bit of a tonal shift from this murdered girl thing.
Yeah.
And not only that, Susan Sarandon does blindly walk around. She's like from a different film. She's had a lot of stick in the press for this, that she is the comedy character. And you don't need a comedy character in this sort of film. She's like, and she blunders one scene. She's looking after things, but she's smoking and drinking and alcoholic. She's hiding her booze here and everywhere. And it's like sort of Frank Spencer, but an alcoholic Frank Spencer.
So that's an idea. That's a film I'd watch.
You know, it's just inappropriate.
Well, yeah.
It's just wrong.
So it's that's a cross between After You've Gone, The Fountain, and Boogie Nights.
Pretty much, yeah.
Right.
If that's your bag.
Probably less than the Boogie
Nights. With a bit more child murder.
Exactly. Yeah, if that's your bag, then go and see
ideal, really.
The Lovely Bones. I will make no bones about it. I didn't really approve. Neither did these people. We've had some tweets. Jez Gibson said, Lovely Bones. Peter Jackson could do better with a film that didn't quite feel right. Tucci, Sarandon and the Salmon Girl were right on the money. 5 out of 10. Yeah, I should have called her the Salmon Girl. That's better. Nick Tyler, though. Nick Tyler said, The Lovely Bones was very good, but I wish Jackson had made The Hobbit instead.
Yeah.
Well, don't we all, I think. Yeah. And Nick Rolls said, "Love your bones, very impressed, and I'm not biased." I think because he's from New Zealand. That's probably why. Why he said that. Intense and gripping, top-notch performance by Stanley Tucci, especially. I would agree with that. Tucci is.
See, quite. It seems relatively unusual because it seems to be fairly badly reviewed this across the board, and yet it's got an Oscar nomination and I think a few other awards here and there. So it seems quite unusual for a film to be quite slated off, and yet get highlights picked out from it.
I wonder who likes it and who hates it, whether it's people who've read it and people who haven't. That'd
very
be
true.
Quite good.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I think it may split some people, but I suspect that in years to come, if you go up to Stanley Tucci and say, you know, I really admire your film career, Lovely Bones, a little bit dodgy though, I expect he might go a little bit maniacal about it because he can get a little bit touchy.
No. It's been a slow week this week. There's not much opportunity to write new material.
I've been thinking of that
one.
Just
trotting out new puns on a regular
I've been
basis.
On holiday last week. Can you tell? Yeah. I haven't done any gigs for a little while. I've been storing them up.
There's a pent up aggression. Exactly. In pun form.
Sorry. Let's move on, shall we? We've got plenty of hours to get through, so let's move on. Should we do news desk?
We can do news desk.
News desk. News desk.
The improv jingle. After trying an actual jingle, which was met with general disappointment from people, but our own beeps. Yeah. Well, main news, which is sort of is not most relevant to us, but it is very relevant to us, but also the UK as a wider whole. There were lots of talk recently about the Odeon and View and Cineworld cinema change, which collectively make up something like 80% of UK cinema.
About that, it's a lot.
Not showing Alice in Wonderland, which caused a lot of upset because Disney wants to get the DVD out sooner, so get it in cinemas less long, and so cinemas are up in arms. And then Cineworld caved, or came to some arrangement, but View and Odeon still said, no, we're not going to. And Odeon is our local cinema, so we'd have to go further afield to go and see it. And then I think last week they finally came out with a very vague statement, just said, well, we have come to a mutual understanding that will further our commercial interest. Basically, someone got paid off.
Pretty much, yeah.
As far as I can work out.
Probably Disney said, if you want any other Disney films ever again, you'll have this one.
Although at the same time, Odeon probably said, if you want us to ever show any other Disney films again, we'll show. So I think there was probably a genuine compromise involved. But they've come to an arrangement, so Alice in Wonderland is going to be in UK cinema.
It's an interesting one, because a lot of they've only done this in the UK for this film. Other countries have still got the normal 17-week window. And but Disney have said they're trying this at various times. It's to fight piracy, is their reasoning, that they get the DVD out sooner, and that way people don't have that gap when they can't see it in the cinema. So they just download it. So that's what they want to do.
But I think cinemas were annoyed, because as far as I've read in the past, sort of like the opening weekend, the vast majority of ticket price goes to the studio, and then as a film is shown for longer and longer and longer, the cinemas get a bigger and bigger share of the show, of the profits.
I see.
So if a film is in the cinemas for 5 weeks less, then that's 5 weeks less money that cinemas are getting. And it's where they probably earn quite a bit of money on that final 5 weeks.
They make all the money on popcorn anyway.
Well, true. From you especially.
Fat woman.
No.
I'm just saying that's what you're implying. I'm not recording you that.
Sorry, yeah. Weirdly, that was one of the few times I didn't actually mean that as an insult to Jen.
Really?
It just sounded like it.
Just sounded that way.
No, that was a genuine thing, because Jenny is incredibly slimline and yet really loves her popcorn. Yeah. Clearly.
Love the corn.
But where she sticks it.
So if you want to sit in the cinema with her, you'll find out. Her mouth.
Oh, no. Never end a conversation with her mouth. Never yell that to end a conversation.
I think it was worth pointing out.
Oh, dear.
Anyway.
You'll have to forgive us. The fans
that was the news desk.
BAFTA, I was going to mention the BAFTA wins as well, very briefly. I won't go into the detail. We've done the whole list before of what the things are. But in our absence, the BAFTAs were handed out, and a lot of good British wins, but then it is the British Awards.
Well, that's it. The cynic in me just thinks, well, of course British people get them because it's British Awards. Yeah. At the same time, I think I haven't seen An Education, but having now seen A Single Man, I think Carey Mulligan and Colin Firth both deserve them.
It's
not like they were complete outsiders. I think it's a genuine...
She's very good. Yeah. In fact, she's in a new film quite soon with Keira Knightley. And it's interesting looking at the poster. You see them both there, quite equal parts in the poster. Whereas before, Keira Knightley obviously would be the star quality you're attracted to in the poster. I just keep finding myself looking at Carey Mulligan. Looks like she's beaming more of this star status to. And in fact, I think she's got the main role in it, and Keira Knightley's sort of now being downgraded a little bit in the editing.
So, and Keira Knightley, she's knocking on a bit now. She's got to be, what, 22?
Oh, at least, I don't know. Retire. Get that bus pass.
But both Oscar nominees.
Quite pleased about that, though.
Well, really? Ooh. Meow.
Oh, come on.
But they're both Oscar nominees, so I think,
exactly, fair enough. But, so, the BAFTAs, in terms of seeing how, because the Oscars will be happening, by the, in fact, maybe by the time you've listened to this podcast.
True, Sunday,
next couple of days, next few days. And
I wish I'll do my usual desperate bid to try and see them live somewhere and then fail.
Yeah.
And then just sit there in front of my computer hitting F5 repeatedly.
Exactly, yeah. I'll see the opening monologue thing with the songs and then just...
F5 refreshes the page. Okay. Sorry. Just to explain. Sorry, I just got a very blank look from Jen.
You're just bored. Hit a random key for
just start thumping the keyboard through
despair. I could go to bed. But no, what's interesting is the Hurt Locker did very well. Avatar didn't so much.
You predicted that.
And I hope that means... Yeah, because Hurt Locker got Best Film and Best Director, which is normally the way the two tend to go hand in hand. But yeah, it's weird. Apparently, if Avatar wins the Oscar, it'll be the highest grossing Oscar winner ever.
Right.
Because it was the highest grossing film ever. So yes, if The Hurt Locker wins, it'll be the lowest grossing film
ever.
Is
that right? So
apparently, it's earned all of something like $12.5 million at the US box office. It's pitiful. And yeah, it's probably made its money back.
Yeah.
So it's just a weird one. I think people are talking about war films, saying it's very rare that war films do well at awards.
Mm.
Generally speaking, Patton, Platoon, and another one in about the past 30 or 40 years
are
the only ones. And lots of nominations.
Yeah, yeah.
But it tends to only be big hits that do well in awards. So Hurt Locker could be an upset.
I've heard some people saying that America almost, you know, even though Britain didn't give Avatar the thing, because we enjoyed it and people are still seeing it. It's still number one in the box office now. But people are seeing it going, well, I think I've seen it because you have to see it. And it was okay, but it wasn't brilliant necessarily. Yeah. It was visually stunning, but, you know, it's not the best film of the year, maybe. Mm. Whereas America, they're saying that given that who votes for it in the Oscar category in America, that actually they will give it to Avatar because they can't afford not to, in a way. They're almost saying, this has done so much for our film industry, we have to give this pat on the back because it's done so much for us. So might go differently in America. We'll see.
Yeah, which is why I'd kind of like Avatar to sort of get something, but I think Hurt Locker get Best Film and Avatar get Best Director. Because while Hurt Locker is brilliant directed, I think James Cameron is a massive achievement getting Avatar made. So I think he deserves Best Oscar more than Best Picture. But we shall see.
Awesome. We've actually done a little Oscar prediction thing, a little sweepstakey thing. We've maybe lined up to get, you know.
Could be in the money.
Yeah, it could be in the money. It's vouchercodes.co.uk. You can go and see that. And it's various Mark Kermode, Andrew Collins, all the top film critics.
More to the point, me and Paul.
Movie banter, you know.
And movie mistakes, because I got a separate entry.
Indeed.
We couldn't enter collectively.
So, but you can go and you can see that. I think it's vouchercodes.co.uk/competition/Oscar. /predictions, something like that.
Fair enough. Go to the Movie Banter website.
Yeah, go to moviebanter.co.uk. Yeah, there's a link there. Do that. And yes, you can see what we've predicted. And if we win, then we'll gloat.
Yeah.
So that's all to look forward to.
Or cry. Or if we never mention it again, we didn't win.
Yeah.
We've had some people emailing in some Oscar-based thoughts. Mm. So a couple of these. This is from Blair, who said, "I would like to see the Hurt Walker.
It sounds like a cartoon.
It's Fuzzy Bear.
Someone cooking a stir fry, just smashing him around the head.
The Hurt Locker would like to see that win for Best Picture, and Cameron get Best Director.
That's what I think.
I'd go the other way around.
I hadn't read it either.
I would go the other way around, but never mind. Best Director, since he personally changed filmmaking so much with his efforts for Avatar, but I thought the film as a whole probably wasn't the best released in the last year.
No, definitely true.
I would also like to see Carey Mulligan win for Best Actress, since I was watching Doctor Who yesterday and realised she plays Sally Sparrow in the episode Blink.
She does.
I know she was in an episode somewhere. I had no idea where it was that one, which is just about the best of the revived series. Yeah,
no,
I would agree.
No disagreement on this.
I don't think they watch Doctor Who, though, for deciding who's going to win.
Do they not? No. Is that what you're saying?
The only slight bad thing about her now being big in films and getting Oscar nominations is that she's now never going to be a Doctor Who assistant.
I know, she'd be brilliant.
And she would have been great, because of Sally Sparrow, she was phenomenal. She's never going to reappear.
Exactly. Well,
you never know.
Had a bit of a kick start there.
They might offer a fat load of cash.
Well, that's true. Can but hope.
Yeah.
Doctor Who film series could happen.
Well, yeah.
Ruin
could
it again.
Do.
Jez Gibson says, "Let's talk Oscars. I would like to thank the Academy for including District 9, which was the most rounded blockbuster of the year. Avatar should just get something for the direction and technical achievement." Well, I think it's going to get the technical stuff, isn't it?
Certainly? Yes.
Mm.
"Personally, I don't know what all the fuss was about with the Hurt Locker. Good but not great," so says Jez. "And it's a no-brainer about Christoph Waltz for Best Supporting Actor. That's a bingo."
True, I do hope so. I think everyone will be... The weird thing is, because it was quite a long time ago now, so memories may have faded slightly, but I think there'll be a bit of an uproar if he doesn't get it.
Now, Christoph Waltz is he's a man, isn't he? He's a single man.
Spare us. Is he single? He might be married.
Well, he's a man on his own right, isn't he? You know, he's not attached. He's not a Siamese
true.
Twin.
He's not a Siamese twin. That is right. True.
Given that fact, let's talk about a single man, shall we?
Fair enough. I can only apologise, listeners. Paul is gigging again soon. This will all be sort of vented.
Pent up.
I haven't seen this. I'm going to have some plan.
Fair enough.
I haven't seen it either. Go on then, John.
A Single Man. This stars Colin Firth as the single man of the title, who, as the film opens, his partner of 16 years has just died in a car crash. And he is gay in 1962 and just doesn't really
he's
know...
He's gay only in 1962.
Yeah, only 1962. Yeah. 61, 63, straight, but no. Right. No, he's a gay man whose partner has just died. And so in the 60s, it was sort of, you know, gay people were in the public awareness, sort mm-hmm. of, but not really accepted. And it was, you know, still a bit, you know, questions were still being asked. I don't think in America, because this is all in LA.
All right.
But he's a Brit in LA, being mm-hmm. a teacher. But he just can't get a handle on life, really. He's just been miserable for... Well, they say his partner's just died. His partner died 8 months ago. And he's basically reached the end of his rope. And he just can't quite make life work and isn't enjoying anything and takes no joy in anything.
Mm-hmm.
And as we see in the trailer that he has a gun. And this is not giving anything away to say that it's implied that he's planning on killing himself with this gun at some point
right.
in the day that we see him. But he goes to school and sort of seems to put things in order and gives a lecture where he's a little bit out of it and talks to another teacher while sort of eyeing up some boys playing basketball or tennis, actually. And, yeah, so he's just trying to make the day work, but he's not quite with it. But it's just a very detached observation of this man sort of going through the day. And he spends a bit of time with Julianne Moore, who is another British woman who he had a brief fling with once but didn't work out.
Because he's gay.
Well, yes. Which
that would explain it.
Well, that would explain it, yes. Which she sort of brings up because she's clearly still interested but has since been married and divorced. But
so it's a bit Will and
there.
Grace.
No, very much not. But it's a very deliberate film because it's written and directed by Tom Ford, who is
fashion.
Yes, is he Gucci or some? No,
Primark
not Gucci.
Or something.
No, like sorry. But he's I know he turned around a big fashion label,
right?
And he ran a fashion magazine as well. And so the whole film is very, it's not very stylized, but it has a very definite look to it,
mm-hmm.
which seems to fit the 60s style quite well. Mm. And yeah, it's very, very watchable, really. I mean, for arguably, not much happens in the film, sort of.
But it sounds quite intense, and not intense.
Well, it's not like you constantly think he could kill himself at any moment, because that's not that kind of film. But you get the feeling he's on a path,
yeah,
and he's just working his way along it. But then a couple of different things come up, and sort of, you know, may affect him or may not, and take a different turn. And there's one style used, which is, sometimes the screen's quite washed out and other times it's quite colourful, depending on what's going on, and you'll see how it works as you watch it. And it could be quite forced, but it's not, it's quite natural. And just suddenly you'll see, hang on, is the light just different in that shot? Oh no, it's a bit saturated because of what he's looking at and how he feels about things.
Okay.
And I like things like that.
Yeah, and I think there's only, I mean, it's quite obvious, but it's not too forced. I think there's only one shot, I mean, it takes a little while before I even really notice it was happening, and there's only one
shot where there's
a definite change in the same shot, where something happens, and you suddenly see it goes from very washed out to quite colourful, and you think, that makes sense. So it gives you an insight into how he's feeling, because because he's very, basically, he's a very guarded man, because he's, you know, gay in the 60s. So, and he gives a talk in a lecture about minorities and how people are fearful of minorities, and how saying, you know, and some minorities just look like everyone else, and yet we're in plain or people are in plain sight, and sort of looking at a couple of other students in the room who might be gay or might not, who are looking a bit shifty or, I mean, we're worried that he's onto them, or it was that slight nervousness in the air. So yeah, it's just a very interesting film to watch very, very good performance by Colin Firth.
So worthy of the award, he won the BAFTA.
I think so.
On target, for, you know.
I can't think who else is up for the Oscar, but I definitely think he's a viable candidate for it, because it's a very deliberate, definite performance with doing a very good job of making, you can work out what he's thinking without really expressing it too much. I think especially when we see various flashbacks to him and his partners together, and but especially when we see a flashback to when he gets the phone call about he died in a car crash and about the car crash and what's happened, and also we get a bit of backstory or infer a bit of backstory about how maybe the family of his partner isn't entirely happy about the fact that he was gay, and his reaction to that phone call is very good, because it's very, It's quite stiff upper lip, but not, and you can see it. Sort of the facade starting to crack.
Yeah.
Well, he is a very good actor.
Yeah, he is.
Although he did say
in an interview that when he shot that scene, he just heard the news that John McCain was conceding the election, So he said that. Then he said that was not conducive to tragedy in my mind. Fair enough. But he managed to overcome that and get tragedy out there.
It's
a very, very watchable film, and it's not. I worried it would be quite serious and a bit heavy going. It's not. Mm-hmm. It's actually quite funny in parts. But it's just, it's just very, very engaging and well worth watching.
Nice to see him not doing his classic rom-com.
Yes, definitely not.
You know, in a Christmas jumper. he's not called Darcy in this.
No, he's not.
No, fine. That's quite unusual,
No, it's called George something.
Darcy. Yeah, he's done a couple of Rosses in a way, hasn't he? What's the one where he did recently where he was compulsive eating? When he got stressed, it's some sort of wedding-based film.
That was The Accidental Husband. Uma Thurman's fiance. Oh, that was a bad film.
Yeah, so it's good that he's moved on.
Well, yes. In fact, Accidental Husband is a good. Yeah, that scale may come up later in this podcast.
Oh, really? Ooh, yes. I'm guessing for Leap Year.
Yes,
probably.
Maybe.
Yes, not for Mick Max or the Crazies.
Not really. That's good. A single memory. I mean, it's weird. There's a lot to say about it, but partly we're on the clock. And also, it's not that it's giving away anything, but it's more, it's just worth watching.
It's an interesting study.
Rare that you have a fashion guy behind directing a film, really, and so you can see that would bring a lot to that. I did hear somewhere that he's taken on, partly his fashion background means that he has looked at every single detail of the film minutely. And he'll only add something if it helps the character or the story.
Yeah.
And so apparently he spent 6 months looking for the house that this character lives in.
Yes.
And to find the thing that exactly represents what he's after.
Well, it does work, because it's a very definite 60s-style house.
Yeah.
Weirdly reminded me of... apologies to listeners briefly, but Izzy's dad's house.
Right, okay.
There's a friend of ours who has...
You know Izzy, come on, keep up.
Yeah, no, but a friend of ours whose father has a house who is like a sort of a modern version of it, it's just quite glass, but it reminds me of that.
Well, he's an architect who trained in the 60s, isn't he?
Well, yeah, so I suppose it makes sense.
Is that Izzy's dad or Colin Firth?
Yeah. Izzy's dad.
Oh, is that right? I don't know that. Yeah. Izzy's dad's Colin Firth?
Yeah.
Wow.
we've got slightly off topic. You can see it's all very deliberately structured, and Colin Firth's character, he sort of lays things out, ordered, but not in an OCD... You might think it was an OCD way, but it's more just wants to get things together, and he's immaculately turned out, and things like that. So there is definitely the air of fashion about
it. It's a very stylish film, very well thought
but
out.
But not
it,
because I have no real tolerance for fashion stuff.
Yeah,
So the fact that none of that annoyed me, and it actually added to the film. Yeah, and I enjoyed the look of it.
Depends
on
what you mean
telling.
By fashion stuff, really.
I don't do clothes. I don't believe in them.
I don't like films with clothes.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's true.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Yes,
I'll watch hair.
Different genre for those kind of films.
We're back to Wet Dreams May Come.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, moving on.
No, but I mean, overly specific ways of doing things generally don't do anything for me, but this film worked.
Cool. Good to see it.
So yes,
very nice.
Cracking on.
Yes, indeed.
This week in movie history.
We could do that.
Or not? Is that not right?
No, well, we weren't going to do that.
We're going to do the crazies.
Fine. Break up the program.
No, we'll
do
the crazies.
Fine.
Sorry, I've ignored Paul's running order. No, let's do the crazies.
Okay, are you sure?
I am.
Okay, fair enough. We'll do the crazies.
Open the box.
I'll finish my flan, and John, you can have a bit of flan now.
Fair enough.
Go on, flan time. And it's flan time. That's a Flight of the Conchords reference. If you don't know what I mean, listen to Business Time by the Flight of the Conchords, and you will laugh like a drain.
That is very true.
The Crazies. This is yet another horror remake.
Yes.
We're just doing a little crazy noise.
Crazy.
James going crazy.
Yeah.
It was originally a George A. Romero film.
Oh, yes.
And in the 70s, and now it's a 2010 film. And but I actually thought it was all right. You know, this is compared with a lot of, it's not an 18 rated sort of Rob Zombie blood splatter.
Oh, is it not? Because the trailer makes it look a lot.
Yeah.
It's a 15 rated.
Okay.
And and it's, you know, yes, it's got blood in it, and it's got all those things. It's got, now again, I'd loathe to call them zombies. I mean, they are. Let's be fair, they're zombies.
Yes.
But they're the infected. It's like that 28 Days
Later
thing.
It's in a Shaun of the Dead, right? Don't say that. What, the Z word? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they're not strictly zombies.
No, they're not dead people come back to life. The loose plot of it is it's set in a small town, I believe it's Iowa, and we follow Timothy Oliphant. He's your star name in this one. He's the pretty much only star in it.
Right.
Apart from Rada Mitchell, is that her name?
Oh, yes.
She knows well. Jenny's going,
who?
Oliphant?
Jen, you can say who. Rada. He was the killer in Scream 2.
Oh, you've ruined the
sorry,
Scream 2.
Spoiler, but it's been 12 years, let it go. He was also in Go as a drug dealer.
That's right.
Yeah. He was in Gone in 60 Seconds as a policeman.
Right, okay.
He was also in Hitman as the Hitman. That was a bad film.
Yeah, you like that one, don't you?
Oh, I nearly swore. Sorry. Yeah, Hitman is on the Max Payne scale of awfulness.
Yeah, I thought, yeah.
So no, but he's good. I like him.
He's
a
good actor. Actually. Yeah, a lot. You may not know him. No one likes to talk about him. He's the olifant in the room. Bada boom!
You snuck that one past my defences.
There you go.
I didn't see that coming.
There
at all.
You go.
Because that was in context as well, and being sort of under the radar star.
That was a sucker punch in the guts, wasn't it?
I'd argue that was more just a sucker pun to the guts.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, good point.
Oh, don't you start.
Oh, that barely qualifies.
Jen, you've got the rest of the episode to get a pun in, okay? There you are.
Okay.
Ooh, your challenge is on.
Oh, no.
Meanwhile, yes, Timothy Oliphant, he's the sheriff of the town. His wife is the doctor of the town. It's one of these towns. It reminded me of Jericho, if you saw the TV series Jericho.
I know of it.
Then it's that sort of small town. Everyone knows each other. There's old man Grayson and the house on the hill. Everyone knows each other. But it's quite nice. It's nicely done in a way, because it means then that when we see this town suddenly as an entire town is being single-handedly wiped out by this toxic, there's something that's dropped in a river or something, and people are slowly being infected. It starts off with there's a ball game, and a guy just walks onto the field with a gun and holds it up and is about to shoot the sheriff, and of course that has to be dealt with accordingly. And people just slowly start to act a bit odd, turn on their families, start to kill people. And I believe the original was much more about that family turning on family thing, and you can't trust your dad, you can't trust your brother, sort of thing. This one, a bit more about the army. This is actually once we've dealt with the family turning on each other, then the army come in and isolate the town, and then it's just about survival, getting past the army, really.
Right.
Okay. So, but I thought it did quite a nice job actually of it. We cared about the town; they set it up really nicely. It's a lovely little community. We're rooting for them. And yeah, I just thought it was quite nice. Timothy Oliphant, very good lead, you know, it was very good indeed. And it was nicely, it was a 15 rated, but I don't mind that because, it depends on
the kind of film you're doing, really. Yeah. It doesn't sound like it needs
it means it's a tense
gore,
thriller.
Which is good.
They rank up the tension that way, you know, rather than just having blood and guts everywhere. So I thought it was actually a fine addition to the previously mentioned zombie canon. Remember the zombie canon?
Oh, the zombie canon.
From many weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
That'll be dangerous.
But no, I thought it was good fun, and there's little else to say about it apart from that. We've had Movie Studio, because actually I put on Tweet, we do tweet our reviews sometimes, at Movie Banter, and I said that I thought it was fun, and Movie Studio has tweeted back saying, "Yay, thanks for saying it was fun. I'm waiting to get my hands dirty. Love the Crazy Dead People."
Because it just said, "Love Crazy Dead People." I don't know if that means that the person who wrote it loves
Crazy Dead People,
or if it's sort of sending love. Crazy Dead People. So this account might be run by Crazy Dead People.
Lots of love, Crazy Dead People. Yeah, very nice indeed.
Yeah, that's quite good. So, either way, pretty
cheerful. All valid, all good.
One thing I will add, now this is not going to sound PC in any way at all.
Oh, yes, you mentioned this earlier.
Yeah,
isn't it?
I'm horrifically curious.
Bad. Yeah. Okay. I was in the studio. Don't judge me. I was in the cinema.
Studio.
It's in the cinema screen. And there was... I just found it interesting. I just thought it was worth mentioning because it interested me. There's a guy down front in the wheelchair bit, and he clearly had a mental illness of some sort, as well as a physical debilitating illness. And it was quite interesting. To start off with, he was just watching the film. And what I found fascinating, I was up at the back, and every time it got tense and it got scary, he couldn't control his arms.
Right.
And, you know, in the way that some people with particular disabilities can't. And when it got really tense and scary and the scenes got particularly, you know, there's someone stepping towards you and quick, you know, there's guns and there's knives and that sort of thing, his arms went all over the place. Mm. I just found it a very interesting thing to notice, that actually that is sort of what's going on in our heads.
Yeah, it's a physical manifestation kind of mental processes.
Exactly. It's the way we all get tense watching those. And I thought, although, you know, some people could have said, "Oh, I found it distracting," but actually, you know, he couldn't help it particularly.
No.
But I thought it's just a very interesting way of thinking. Actually, that's what I'm doing in my head right now.
Yeah,
going a little bit sort of thing. And he was doing it as well. And then when it got calm, he calmed down again. Mm. I thought it was quite interesting. And actually, after a little while, it looked like, although of course he was being affected by the film, it looked almost like he was affected. He was conducting the film. It did look quite.
Really?
I don't mean it in a bad way. I just thought it looked quite fascinating.
I'd argue that
it got more tense, he started actually conducting it more, and it looked like he was in control of it. I thought this is quite interesting.
Maybe it was just all his film.
I think it could be. I think there's a film in this.
Well, could be
the guy who affects the film by conducting it. Maybe.
I wouldn't say that's not PC. It's just an observation.
It's a bit like adaptation, but physical.
Very true. Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. There's no real point to that, but I thought I'd mention it. It's out of interest.
Interesting. So now
it's been previously hyped. I say hyped. Previously mentioned.
I mentioned it.
Uttered earlier. In this week in movie history.
Yay! I'm not looking.
We didn't burn him.
Exactly. Okay, we'll crack straight through this. Great, nice and quick and simple, this one.
Come on,
here
then.
Are the dates and the events. You tell me the movie. Okay, February 23rd. Okay, week just gone. February 23rd, 1945. US Marines raise the American flag atop Mount Suribachi, the highest point on the island and a key strategic point on Iwo Jima.
Presumably... Is it message from me? No, it's no. Flags of Our Fathers.
Flags of Our Fathers.
Oh, it is that.
That's what it is.
Oh, I don't know that one.
It's the Clint Eastwood.
Never would have got that. Well, I think as we pointed out last time, I had never watched Clint Eastwood film.
Well, clearly, you're quite wrong. Quite wrong.
Sorry.
February 28th, 1985, John Connor is born.
Probably the Terminator.
Or
Terminator 2.
Correct.
That's oh, yes, the date comes. Yes.
That's the fella. Now, we'll be talking about leap year. Very, very shortly, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And this is on a leap year, but this is a particular event. February 29th, okay.
Mm-hmm.
1504.
Right.
It's not leap year. Christopher Columbus uses his knowledge of a lunar eclipse that night to convince Native Americans to provide him with supplies. Supplies. That's another joke you should look
yeah,
up.
Yeah, sorry.
I'd really love it to be Carry On Columbus.
So would I, actually. It's 1492, Conquest of Paradise.
No. Oh, okay.
Is that how, what year was it?
1504.
Oh, so weird, clearly. Weird, I was thinking it can't be 1492, it's far too far away.
12 years after 1492, Conquest
of Paradise.
That's probably the bit at the end when they say, here's what happened 12 years later. Okay, now we're on to March. March the 1st, 1981, Ron Weasley's born.
Harry Potter
and the Philosopher's Stone. Indeed, Philosopher's Stone, that's right.
Harry Potter and any of the nine, I don't know, 12, however.
Seven.
Or it could be Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone if you're the sort of person who says math.
Don't be that hard, please. I mean, if you are...
It sounded quite harsh. I was spitting
those words.
I was not. I love Americans.
In America, it's called the Sorcerer's Stone, and no one's quite sure why.
But Americans say math, not maths.
Yes,
true.
I didn't say anything wrong.
But they don't go... Math.
That's the British way of speaking. We sound pompous.
No, that is true.
They know that.
Yeah, we can't
disagree with that.
No offence. No offence. March 2nd, 1961. Seven agents, an astronomer, and a dumb kid who went down the wrong back road encounter aliens outside New York.
Men in Black.
Men in Black, indeed. Well done.
I've not seen that for a while. Because it's not very good.
I did buy the double box set of Men in Black.
Three quid.
£3 for Men in Black 1 and 2.
Well.
Yet to see it. Still in the cellophane.
They're both worth £1.50. Well, I'd say Men in Black's worth £2. Men in Black 2 is worth £1.
Yeah.
I'd say.
Yeah, maybe.
Give or take.
Yeah. Still haven't opened it, though.
No, likewise.
Okay, and you all. This will be. See if you remember this one. This is a thriller from the last few years. Okay, March 4th.
You always enjoy this, so you always seem so happy when it starts.
And then
more and more depressed.
I
realise you've never seen a film.
Why are you even here?
March 4th, 2006.
Because you're eye candy, Jen, that's why.
Doug Carlin.
Not for listeners, for us.
Is off the case of the ferry boat bomb. So he goes back in time 4 days to try and stop it.
I'm going
to
say déjà vu.
Déjà vu!
Well done!
Well done, Jen, yes. You got it right!
That was on TV.
I've never even seen it.
You got the really?
Yes!
You clearly just have déjà vu. Well,
yeah.
Okay, and last.
I always get confused because that is the Denzel Washington one.
Indeed.
And there's a Nicolas Cage one with Jessica Biel, which is.
Oh, next.
Yes, that's it, next. Right. Which is always. Yeah,
about the shop. March the 7th, 1992. Dana Scully meets Fox Mulder and
X-Files.
They work on the. Indeed, yeah, there you go. That was well done.
Fair. Thank you. Good.
Could have been X Files Fight the Future.
It wasn't.
Right,
but it could have been.
Fool.
Oh dear.
I don't know why.
So that was in this week.
Oh, that was it.
There you go.
Hey,
and
I got two.
Yeah, you got two. Well done.
It's and, actually better than I normally do.
You did very, very well. And as a special reward, you get to review the next film. Because we mentioned a leap year in this week of movie history.
Yes.
Let's talk about leap year.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
That's how it works. Well, this is the scale I mentioned earlier of the. sorry, Paul has now just sat down.
Sat down, waiting.
Entertain me.
Well, fair enough. I mentioned the scale earlier of. The Accidental Husband being down the bottom end of the scale of dull, irritating rom-coms.
Mm.
And I wouldn't say this is as far down that end. It's all right, but it's not great.
I think that this, if this film was a colour, it would be a salmon pink beige, because it's kind of fluffy and comfortable, but it's quite inoffensive.
Yeah,
it's
a
peachy colour.
It's absolutely 100% predictable straight down the line from the word go.
I heard, I think Mark Kermode's review of it happened to point out that he was there with a stopwatch, not a stopwatch, but a watch, not a stopwatch. And because I saw the trailer, And quite a lot is given away in the trailer, it would seem.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he noted the last plot point in the trailer, when that appears in the film. And apparently it's about 1 hour 20 in the film is the last plot point from the trailer. And then there's about 10 minutes left at the end of that. Yeah. Which is,
oh, 1 hour 20. Oh, sorry, yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah,
in other words, so what his point is that the trailer is given away.
Yeah, basically the trailer is very much the condensed form of the film.
So kind of you don't need to see the film if you see the trailer.
No, absolutely not. But that's it. This is where I end up debating films with people, or my standards for films, because some people would say, "But what's the point in seeing? You know what's going to happen? It's a rom com. This happens, that happens.
Because it's a rom com."
But that's the point. That would be my argument. Because if you're in the mood for a bit of schmaltzy romantic drivel, then this will do the job just about. And that's not That's not a reason to dislike a film. Yeah, if you know what it's going to do, and you don't want to see that, then don't go and see it. Hmm. It doesn't make it an awful film. What makes it an awful film is if it's done badly. And this isn't done badly, it's just done predictably.
Yes.
The main two cast members, Amy Adams and Matthew Good.
Yes.
Who is also in A Single Man.
Who is
Colin's
good
first partner.
Does that count? I don't think that counts, does it?
It'll do. But they save it, essentially. I mean, they make it watchable, because they're likeable people. You end up, by the end, you do actually end up sort of caring or wanting them to be happy, just about.
Yeah.
I felt a bit bad for the fiancé.
He just looks a bit weird from the start. Well, he's too well
turned out. He's just a sort of smooth. He doesn't do anything wrong, but he's the typical. The example I always think is Bill Pullman in Sleepless in Seattle,
right?
Who is Sandra Bullock's? I know Meg Ryan's fiancé, who is just always, you know, he's there, but he's a bit dull, and you know he's ultimately going to get kicked off by the end of the third reel.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, so
don't get too attached to him.
I just always feel a bit sad for people like that.
There are no surprises in this film. I think some places the main fault is actually it's slightly xenophobic towards the Irish.
Well, the trailer certainly. Well, did I hear the phrase "top of the morning" to
top
you?
Top of the morning to you.
I think so. There's lots of backwater drunken Irish.
Is there any
in the bar
folk dancing?
There is really? At the wedding.
They stop off
really?
At the wedding.
Oh,
yeah, this random wedding.
But at the same, what you say xenophobic is more sort of stereotypical rather than xenophobic, because they make reference. Yeah, they get welcomed in by people who run B&Bs, and people at the wedding say, "No, just turn up, it's fine."
Oh, okay.
Well, so the first time that you ever really come across any Irish people, they're drunk, falling over in a deserted bar, getting drunk.
Well, that is true. But then that's not saying all Irish people are like that, because you meet other Irish people who aren't like that.
Okay, fair enough.
But yeah, I mean, it does just play up to your Irish stereotypes.
I'm curious to, actually, if I were to see this film at all, which I probably won't, I'd quite like to see it in Ireland.
Yeah.
And just to see how the audience responds.
Well, yes.
Do they go, hang on a second?
Actually, really, you haven't actually said the plot of this at all. The reason it's called Leap Year is because this woman's fiancé, or woman's boyfriend, goes to Ireland. Then she reads, or her dad tells her. Yeah, John Lithgow plays her dad.
Oh, really?
Three-line part for no good reason.
As I said to John, I haven't seen him since he tried to ruin Christmas. This is great.
So he said, "No, but in Ireland you can propose to your boyfriend on Leap Day."
On Leap Day.
And she goes, "Right, I'm going to go and do that," and then tries to fight her way to Ireland.
You can do it anywhere, really.
Well, that's what I thought. Yeah. I thought you could do it anywhere.
Yeah.
Except, of course, he's in Ireland, so she needs to go there in order to catch him.
So they go on this very... she goes on this kind of mission to try and find her fiancé to finally pop the question, which all goes disastrously wrong.
And
with hilarious
getting escorted there by a sort of bar owner / cab driver.
He happens to be better looking than...
He's better looking and more fun and less uptight and all the rest of it. Who does also... I mean, there are one or two thoughts occur to me just saying, well, why wouldn't you at least ask, oh, hang on, someone has... Like him just saying, well, why? Surely if he hasn't proposed to you, he doesn't want to propose to you.
Yeah. So
and then I say, no, that's not the case at all. But it might be.
Oddly enough, this film randomly reminded me of 39 Steps.
Really?
Yeah, because...
That confused me as well when Jen mentioned that.
Well, no, because they're on this journey and they go to this B&B and they have to pretend to be husband and wife and stay in this room together and not let their secret out and things like that that put them in strange situations. It did remind me of trying to be there at a certain time to get a certain place.
I saw in the trailer there's that bit where they're trying to pretend to be a couple.
Yes.
And people around them saying, "Go on, give her a kiss." You know,
so that, we can watch.
Exactly. That is a little bit creepy. Because it's in the full context of the film, there's three couples out there. And they're sort of saying, "Oh, but you make marriage laugh through, you've got this all in the kiss." So they all sort of demonstrate. But it just is, it's a little bit swingersy. Not in terms of the Jon Favreau, just in terms of,
And also a little bit overdone farce, I'd have thought. We're going to pretend to be a couple. Of course we're going to. Wasn't it done in the... that Sandra Bullock film?
Yeah. Yes, The Proposal. Yeah, but slightly more believably, that, right. Because then they're pretending to everyone to be engaged, yeah. rather than just some stranger saying, kiss her now, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little bit weird.
Yeah. Yes.
But obviously there's no surprises in the end of this film, and I'm just going to mention quickly why I think this film should be called The Leap Year for another reason.
Yeah.
She obviously...
This was the most I laughed in the film, and it's not a joke that's within the film.
Okay.
It's what Jen did.
Not deliberate.
She obviously turns up, and she turns up a new woman, how her life has been changed.
No, don't say exactly how it all...
Oh, well...
You can say what...
There's a bit, transformation. We
there's
know,
there's a sort of... No, it's not even a transformation. She's just wearing a different dress. It's just...
It's a transformation.
It's not... doesn't really count.
John and would she, like it. It's fashionable, then. It doesn't like those fashion films.
Yeah, she's wearing clothes. I don't believe in any aliens wearing clothes. It's terrible.
And at the moment where she thinks that she's been completely disappointed... and she runs off, and she charges off. Cut to beautiful Irish cliffscape.
Craggy rock cliff
face. I mean, it's just like she's going to throw herself.
That'll be quite a dark ending.
Yeah, that was it. Just hurls them off. But yeah,
so that's why I think it should be called Leap Year.
Yeah,
that's the hidden message.
Yeah, well, yeah. So high, it takes a year to fall.
Yeah.
So that's it. It's entirely predictable. If you can't see every aspect of it coming, then you've clearly never seen a romantic comedy before. But if you're in the mood for a rom-com, then
I did quite enjoy it.
Yeah, it was fine. I didn't mind it.
Fair.
Pretty landscape.
I like Valentine's Day more, weirdly, which may be telling.
Yeah,
I think Valentine's Day had more unpredictable story elements.
I think I'm still waiting. I haven't seen a rom-com for a few weeks in the cinema, a couple of months maybe. And I think I'm not going to rush to see.
Oh, no.
This one.
Watch it on TV.
Yeah, if it comes on TV.
We're
or
doing
if you get
something
DVD
else in the background.
Then, yeah, it's very much. I mean, it's perfectly pleasant, inoffensive viewing, but no, make no great effort.
Yeah. Unless you like beige.
Not really.
There you go.
Fair, I won't bother. Yes. I, instead, went to see a very different film called Micmax. Sequel to Mad Max.
Mad's brother.
Micmax Beyond the Thunderdome.
Mad's Irish brother.
Indeed, yeah. Micmax, this is a French film. This is the latest film from Jean-Pierre Jeunet. And I'll let Jen just...
Is he Irish as well?
He is... No. Jean-Pierre Jeunet. Yeah. And, this is... So he's the guy who did Amelie. And the last thing we did was a very long engagement with Audrey Tautou.
Ah, yes.
And he's also done City of Lost Children and Delicatessen. And I've always liked his stuff. Mm. I've got a few of his films on DVD. I've liked City of Lost Children and Delicatessen and Amelie, very fine movie. And so this is the latest one from him. And I saw the pitch of it, and it was sounded quite interesting, about a guy who he's got a bullet lodged in his brain. His dad was killed by a landmine. And he's sort of destitute, he lost his job and everything like that. So he joins with a sort of a band of underground sort of circus, you know, ex-circus people, which is very much a classic sort of Jean-Pierre Jeunet thing. He always, you know, his things about, you think of Amelie and you can see that sort of fitting in. There's a small band of people who are all slightly unusual and on the outskirts of society. So he joins with them, and their thing is they live basically in a rubbish dump and they recycle things. They go out, they find little things that work.
Right.
Come back, transform them, and just put them in a little conveyor belt, and then with a little tweak, and you get the bit of the clock and add it with a bit of the thing there. A bit like MacGyver meets Mousetrap meets a bit of anything like that. You know, it sort of fits all together to make new things.
To make not include batteries not included.
Yeah, exactly. Like Batteries not included. Fine movie. So that's what he does. And then it develops from there in that he then notices one day these two massive arms dealers' buildings, armaments, sort of legal armaments from the outside. One of whom made the bullet that's lodged in his brain, and one of whom made the landmine that killed his dad. So he wants revenge. And then, of course, him and his band of people, with their various inventions and different ways of doing things, go about trying to do this in a slightly unusual way.
Oh.
And it just develops from there. And it's a fine little movie. Lots of fun, lots of inventiveness, lots of... This is the thing that Jeunet does really well with his direction. He's a bit like Terry Gilliam, a bit of Tim Burton in there as well. Just unusual, really nice... little ideas just done really well is what he does particularly splendidly. And you know, in the same way, you've got, I think in all his films, if you think of Amelie, you've got her Amelie with the photo albums and things like that. It's just little things like that, little nice ideas,
charming,
lots of little scenes you go, that's nice, that little vignette there, that was a nice little setup. And it's more, I think, a bit like, it's an odd link this, but Inglourious Basterds, the way that the scenes often work better than the film as a whole.
Yes.
I think it's a bit like that here as well.
Okay.
So although the film left me sort of, didn't have the same sort of heart and soul of Amelie, perhaps, It was just nice all the way along, lots of really nice ideas, and well done. So, yeah, I thought it was lovely, really.
Cool. So
yeah.
is Micmac the French for knickknacks?
I think it might be. Bizarre. I don't actually know what Micmac means as a word, but bizarrely, my phone has it on predictive text, I notice. So it must be a word in the English language.
Fair enough. But in French, because it's Micmac something.
Yeah, I think the translation, because that's whatever the something is, that's what's over the door of the recycling place they stay at. So okay. I think it must be Micmac's recycling place or something like that. So I think that's what it means.
But any French speakers, please get in touch.
Well, indeed. Yeah. Nick Tyler has also seen this film. Micmac is brilliant. Far, far better than anything else that's been out this year. A splendid addition to Jeuneau's nut house of films.
Nice.
And I thoroughly agree with that.
Fair enough. We can only hope it comes to somewhere local to here. So
indeed. If not, it's a nice DVD purchase,
yes.
I would say. Definitely.
Yeah.
So we'll do best French film for Desert Island Flicks.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Sound about right, didn't it? So we'll have to think on that one.
Maybe.
Yes, you.
Anyway, your emails.
Yes, we've had an email from Blair. Hello. Blair. Blair says, not the most topical or films to review now. I finally got around to seeing Sherlock Holmes. I still haven't seen it.
Oh, really?
Thought it was
Oscar-nominated.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not necessarily a fan of Guy Ritchie, but then who is? Ooh, controversial. Ooh.
Madonna.
No, she's Irish. would have preferred it if it were more of a whodunit that the audience could have solved rather than relying on knowledge only Holmes himself could have had.
I can understand that. It didn't actually bother me at the time, but I can see how that would be an interesting way to go.
It's a bit like the old thing, do you prefer Columbo or Murder, She Wrote?
Yeah.
You know, Columbo, you know, done it at the start and then you work backwards, or Murder, She Wrote.
Sort of working forwards with her.
Just a thought. Nice to hear that John had a good Valentine's Day. I presume he means the film, or just to... Did you have a good Valentine's Day?
Well, no, because on Valentine's Day, I saw Valentine's Day with two hot ladies.
Hey! Two hot ladies, 88.
I'm going to tell you said that.
That's
two fat ladies.
Oh, yes.
Yes. If you're calling Caroline and Sally fat, then...
In case you're wondering what the reference is, that's bingo. That's a bingo.
I feel this has been a reference-heavy podcast.
It has been a very reference. If you get all the references, you win a prize.
It's true. The prize is fewer references next time.
Indeed. So Blair says, I myself spent February the 14th watching the very romantic Evil Dead trilogy.
Nice. That's a lot of respect for that.
First one was awful, second was great, and by the third they'd clearly given up on horror and were just playing it for laughs. Not that I minded. Weird to watch them all in one sitting and see just how much Ash has changed from being somewhat of a coward in the first to a hilariously over-the-top action hero in the third.
I love the Evil Dead films, but I only own the second and third ones because the first one never really made that much of an impact on me. And the second one is pretty much sort of a remake. The first 10 minutes is kind of a remake of the first one, and then it goes off in its own direction, but just better than the first one.
Yeah.
So I don't feel the need for the first one anymore. Hey gang, this is from Johan. They loved the last episode and the review of The Wolfman was spot on. I honestly didn't like the film, but I did enjoy Hugo Weaving's performance in it. I've heard that from various people, one of the few highlights. He's very good. I kind of feel he's the only noteworthy performer.
And Hopkins, I'd say. But
oh, really?
To a point.
No, fair enough. Yeah. I saw Shutter Island the other day. Speaking of reviews, I'm a fan of the book, and the movie is almost an exact adaptation. All the cast is good. The story is really, really complex with a crapload of turns. Mm-hmm. I think my dad's brain blew up coming out of the film due to its mass amounts of complexity, so be warned.
Looking forward to that one.
It does, yeah. Mm. I'm sort of half put off in case it's a bit horror-y, but at the same time...
Review that next time, probably.
It's meant to be good. And I'm not a bad speller, but it's darn spell check on the iPod. It's spelled Monstera instead of Monsters. I hate Apple.
Well, why did it spell... Does that mean Apple thinks that Monstera is a word?
Yeah, I don't think that's
Monstera.
A spell.
Monstera.
Well, yeah, because surely if he'd written Monsters, it wouldn't have corrected Monsters to Monstera. Oh,
Sounds like what they call Monsters, Inc. in Spain. Monstera, Inc. Monstera, Inca.
Possibly.
Or not.
Anyway, on to Desert Island Flicks. My favourite Clint Eastwood-directed film is Space Cowboys, which is the first Clint Eastwood movie I'd ever seen.
Never seen that one.
It is very good, actually, yeah. It's another good example of him playing to his age.
Yeah, sounds fun.
My best Clint Eastwood performance is probably Million Dollar Baby, which I think is fair enough as well, actually.
I watched that last week, actually. Showed it to my wife for the first time, and I think she thought it was going to be a happier film than it actually was.
I haven't seen it yet.
Have you not?
No.
It's not a happy film.
Not a happy film, particularly.
Enjoy it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's worth a watch. Also, Johan had a quick question. If we can decline it if we want. We're not going to, because we're reading this out. He started a blog. I want to know if we can plug it. He posts full reviews and other tidbits on there. It is... yoursceptictank.blogspot.com. That's J-O-R skeptictank.blogspot.com.
We can put the link on the movie banter page,
We shall do. Really but yes, but it's also there.
Cheers, Johan.
Thank you very much.
And we've had finally an email from
someone who's off the bottom of the screen.
Ryan Peterson.
Hello, hey, Ryan.
Hey, Ryan. Hey, fellas. And you as well.
Jen Cancer's a fella.
Okay.
Just saw Percy Jackson yesterday and thoroughly enjoyed it. We were going to watch this today.
Yes, that was going to be, but no, it didn't. No, ran out of time.
I would admit that it does have a couple of problems, but it's much more interesting and exciting than the first Harry Potter, which was directed by the same man.
No.
Chris Columbus.
Yes.
1492 Conquest. Also, it was interesting to see Uma Thurman as Medusa, since she'd actually played Venus in The Adventures of Baron Munchausen.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, so she's doing the entire classical repertoire. In response to the comment regarding film reactions from our mothers, this is something we mentioned last time, wasn't it?
What, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Indeed, what mothers think of the films. And yeah, in tandem with the discussion about Dennis Quaid, I just thought that I'd point out that my mother just loved Frequency.
Fair enough.
Good on. I enjoyed it in the theatres and bought it for my brother one Christmas, so we decided to watch it together as a family. I figured people would like it, but I was surprised at my mum's reaction. She was just bawling at the end. In hindsight, I should have expected it. The climax of the story is quite moving when Quaid shows up and blows the bad guy away with a shotgun. I hope we haven't ruined it for anyone here. But it's a what is.
But again, it's
doesn't ruin
14
it. It's
years old.
It's a lovely move. It's a lovely moment. I'm almost weeping myself just thinking about the force of that blast. Sniff. It's so touching. This is all actually in the email. I should He's here for you, Chief. Oh, it's a wonderful moment. No, I love it. Anyway, she really liked it. Thank
Aww.
You, Ryan.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you, Ryan. Nice to hear you actually watching your film all together.
It's quite sweet, yeah, isn't it? In the old-fashioned way. Well done.
We've had tweets as well from Super Toys saying, saw Moon last week. Best movie I've seen in a long time. Made me wonder how I would handle that news better than him, I hope. Mm-hmm. Which, well, if you haven't seen the film, that won't mean anything to you, but will when you watch it.
What's
and you really, thing? Really should. By the way, also, Duncan Jones, yes, his acceptance speech from the BAFTAs, because he won sort of Best British Filmmaker or Best New Achievement by British Filmmaker, and that's on YouTube. And it's only a very short speech, but he's genuinely, he's probably the most touched I've seen.
Right.
Rather than giving the impression of a Hollywood person crying, it's all so touching. He seems genuinely moved, sort of finally. I think he said it took him a long time to work out what he wanted to do with his life, and now he has, and he just seems so happy about it.
Brilliant.
So it's worth a watch.
Colin Firth had a good speech as well.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, I heard part of that, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. He was very nearly going to turn down a single man, and then a guy came to mend his fridge. And so he was about to send the email, then got distracted, and then forgot to send it, and so took the part.
Perfect.
So it's all worked out. Superdog's also says, also watch Pandorum. I want my 2 hours back. What junk that was. Hated the typical witch doctor character. Junk, boo.
So, fair enough.
Well, fair enough.
We've had a couple of tweets on Solomon Kane as well, which is out this week, and I saw it in the cinema, on the listings, and thought could see it, and then didn't. And glad I didn't, to be honest, because Review to a Kill says, Solomon Kane, average twaddle. Purefoy's accent grinded. Story was pretty patchy. Could and should have been better. And a tweet from Mariel Rosencrantz.
My friend Mariel.
Hey, Mariel.
And her friend Mariel Gildenstern.
She says, please tell everyone to stay well away from Solomon Kane. Love James Purefoy, but this was awful. Bad writing, directing and editing. The actors did not stand a chance.
No, yeah.
Also, Everything's Okay, the new Robert De Niro film. So it's a very sweet little film. Nice performances of all the actors involved. A very strong story.
Yeah.
Good.
I think it was Jonathan Ross reviewing that, saying it's someone who's saying it's pretty much designed for sort of the older generation who want a film they can go and see with no surprises, no nothing. They're sort of it's going to be nice people doing nice things, and then the film ends, which doesn't necessarily make it a bad film, but
it
sets out its stall. Yeah, pretty much. So on to Desert Island Flicks.
Indeed,
which is the best French film of all time,
Le Grand Français Movie. ever of all time.
Oh, no, aujourd'hui is today. Toujours. No, it is ever. Always.
Beaucoup de temps.
Of lots of time.
You wouldn't have thought I'd spent a week in France last week, would you? Well, I didn't get very far, to be honest. Calais.
So stock up on booze and then come
indeed,
home.
Indeed, yeah. In fact, there was a cinema. We went over to the ski resort. There was a cinema there. I was going to go and see it, but didn't. Which is the French version of The Princess and the Frog, La Princesse et le Grenouille, as they call it. And I was going to go and see it just to see if I could understand it, still being in French. And I didn't,
because you couldn't even understand the cinema times, so you missed it.
Exactly. pretty much.
Still,
I did quite like the fact they actually the cinema listings thing, they had all in French, didn't they? A lot of things around the resort had it in English as well, but there, like the cinema, they just had all the details just in French and all the synopses and all that. But they did translate the times from 24-hour clock to the 12-hour clock, so the Brits could understand the 12-hour, because the French use a lot of 24-hour clock.
Yeah,
quite a bit.
Don't we?
Not,
well, that's the thing. I thought we could understand it, surely. It said, we'd say 1700 hours, and there's brackets 5 pm for the Brits.
Yeah, I thought
we can work that out. Just tell us what the film's called. That would have been quite. Anyway.
At the same time, if it's going to be a cartoon hand drawn Princess and a Frog, it's not going to be Avatar.
That's very true.
Probably.
Exactly. You'd work it out, wouldn't you? So, anyway,
best French film. Because my artistic experience is minimal. My instinct, Lee, well, there was. My first choice Well, one of my first choices is one that you've gone for.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, so my action leaning...
Ah, yes.
It takes me actually more towards District 13.
Ah.
Or maybe even actually Taxi. But,
Taxi.
I think they're actually four. I think I've got the first three. And they're quite good. But actually, District 13, I like
more
a lot.
More of a Taxi rank than, isn't it?
Well, yes. You're winding down.
I'm winding down. It's time to go. To be honest, isn't it?
No, but I'm going to go District 13 because it's not that well known a film. Well, a sequel has just come out in America and hopefully here soon, called District 13 Ultimatum. Ooh. And it's a film based on parkour, free running.
Oh yes,
but not just it's not just a vehicle for that. There is decent plot around
it. You've got a vehicle, you don't need to go free.
Well, very true. We're starring one or two of the main guys who popularised parkour and is running around Paris in the future. They need to disarm a nuclear bomb and it's all been sealed off due to gangs and crime. So there's lots of fighting, lots of jumping, lots of free running, and it's all very impressive to watch.
Fair enough, yeah.
So yeah, well worth a rental if you find it.
Mm.
So more recent film then?
Yeah.
Jennifer, are you going to go?
I think, it's actually between two which aren't that recent, okay. I would say.
More of the classic.
Yeah, one of them is Betty Blue.
Oh, yes.
But I feel that that's a bit cliche because I discovered that when I was at art college, and I think that is a bit like art college. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like
the classic poster.
Yes. Yeah. But the other one is Jean de Florette, so I don't know if that's even more pretentious.
Gérard Depardieu.
Depardieu. It's just. Actually, I'm going to go with that one because it's just. It's a great film, and there was a follow up as well, which was obviously brilliant. Yeah. And if it can warrant a whole, almost decade of Stella Artois adverts.
Very true.
It's gonna have.
Yeah, that's quite.
That's quite a cultural reference there. It's a great film.
I'd like
one.
To just vote for the Stella Artois adverts. I think they're very good. I do like them. I'm gonna go then for. I had to go for a Jean-Pierre Jeunet film because I do like all of his works, and I do really like City of Lost Children. Micmacs I thought was very nice, but haven't recently seen it. I couldn't say it's his best one yet. But and also, like I said, it hasn't quite got the heart and soul of Amelie. I'm going to go for Amelie.
It is great.
Yeah, it is. It's quite predictable. In fact, I know. In fact, there's I think two or three people I know recently have had babies called Amelie. So it's clearly a film that captures the soul. People name their kids after it. So I can't see many people calling their kids Micmacs. To be honest.
No,
not so much.
If anyone calls their child District 13, that's just cruel.
Exactly. Yeah.
So stick with Amelie. I think is probably the best call.
So there you are. If you have a favourite French film, you can email us podcast@moviebanter.co.uk.
Or you can tweet us @moviebanter.
Indeed.
Or on Facebook. We've got quite a few Facebook fans.
Yeah, good.
I mean, quite a few, not quite a few.
Okay.
Mostly Twitter, lots. Subscribers on the podcast and visit to the website. But Facebook fans.
Come join us. Jump on in.
Come on.
Exactly.
The social networking's lovely.
Exactly. You can have a bit of back and forth and submit stuff and all the rest of it. Yeah. But wonderful. I think that's a lot.
Okay, well, we'll see you on episode 61 then.
Oh, yes.
No.
No?
No. Oh, 61. 60 is such a nice round number.
I know.
It's all angular and weird.
I think it's been a slightly odd one this week, but
apologies if we've been a bit reference or just filthy.
I think we've had laughs. We've laughed, we've cried.
We've thrown ourselves off cliffs and we've made inoffensive.
And hopefully we've told you what films to go and see. So go and see them and tell us what you thought.
Yes. Yeah. And tell us what films we should go and see.
Indeed.
Because we can always learn.
We can.
So, yes, have a good couple of weeks.
And we'll see you then.
See you next time.
Ta-ra.
Bye.